Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Paddock Project. We are here with a USGP, aka Austin Grand Prix recap, Race of the People. We were actually there this weekend, and it was honestly the best awesome weekend we've had. Thinking back to when we first went in, guys, 2021 was our first time that we went to Austin.
3 years ago, 2021. Ugh.
And then we were there last year. So a lot has changed, and it was just one of our best weekends yet. We have to give a huge shout out to Danielle and the Red Bull team for having us in the garage during FP1. We'll talk about that. It was unbelievable. So let's just start on how we started the weekend. So first, we got the weekend started off with some interviews with Yuki and Liam on Thursday. Of course, this is Liam's first race weekend with a full-time seat. So we could definitely sense that. He definitely felt like he was under pressure. There was a lot of anticipation there, but really awesome to talk to him again. And then Yuki was an absolute delight. We were huge fans and how he had such good energy is honestly hilarious. We were cracking up. And yeah, as teammates, it's exciting. They were both joking around and making fun of each other. Yuki was just sitting watching Liam's interview, and they talked off screen to each other during the interview. At one point, Yuki crawled under the table to avoid walking through our camera shot. He was very agile, and he was also really good at soccer. He was juggling and stuff. But what did you guys think? What stood out most from chatting with those two?
It was so fun. I think definitely echo what you said about Liam feeling like he was pretty locked in and focused, because it obviously is such a huge weekend for him and such a huge opportunity that he's been waiting for a really long time. And so you could sense a little bit of that just anticipation and wanting to be super focused and locked in. Yuki, I was saying this to someone, like, I think I've been a little harsh on Yuki in the past sometimes. Sometimes some of it's deserved, some of it's not, but he is sneaking up the rankings of my favorite drivers after that interview. He was so fun. He was so just genuine and down to earth. And I think a lot of these drivers all these drivers just do PR day in, day out. I feel like sometimes it can feel like they're going through the motions, and it's not their fault at all. It's exhausting. Did not feel that way for a second about Yuki. He was just so fun and genuine and seemed super happy to be there and gave really good answers. I can't wait for you all to hear the interviews, which are coming on Thursday.
Totally. I completely agree. I'm so excited for everyone to hear. We had a big discussion about Red Bull, not the team, but the actual beverage with Yuki. And again, he had such a great personality, sense of humor, was very friendly with us, and kind of self-deprecating in a way that I feel like was super genuine, as Tiggy and Chessa was saying, and I feel like was a little rare. You don't see that much. He made a joke that you all hear that he had a big crash at turn three because he accidentally drank too much Red Bull, like above his Red Bull tolerance, drank a full can and forgot to brake. Just very, very entertaining, and he had great energy.
As you'll hear, his tolerance is half a can of Red Bull. So
like most of us, we had a Red Bull and my legs were literally shaking. I was like, guys, let's go get food. I'm dying.
So let's talk about the events after our interviews on Thursday. So Chessa and I went to the WhatsApp and Push event. So WhatsApp has a partnership with Mercedes F1 team. And we went to the premiere of the Push film, which is Lewis Hamilton's new short film on YouTube. So interesting. So I cried actually during the video. So if you haven't watched it yet, you should absolutely watch it.
It was great.
I think it was so powerful. And yeah, it was just, he also did a Q&A after, which we posted a lot about, but he was very off script, which was so funny. Like we were just kind of remarking on how crazy it was that he was just saying all these things that I feel like you never hear.
And they weren't off script in a bad way, but sometimes when you're hearing an F1 driver talk, you can see that the media training has been drilled into them. So you kind of almost anticipate what they're going to say based on whatever they've been asked. And I think Lewis, he was getting interviewed by Naomi Schiff, and she did an awesome job handling it because he was definitely like a little spunky, energetic, and like just had funny answers. Like really his personality, I've never seen it shine through like that. And so it was a real treat and a pleasure. Sarah, tell us what you did on Thursday night.
I went to an Autosport business panel discussion at Soho House, which was awesome. Shout out to John. It was a very interesting talk with James Vowles and Jamie Chadwick. And James, as we've all heard and heard from his vision for Williams in the future. He talked a lot about investing in young talent. For college-age listeners, Williams is doing a huge push to recruit young talent. So that kind of ties into, again, the vision we were talking about of how this isn't a 2025 or even a 2026 project, but really they're looking 5 to 10 years out. He was saying he doesn't want to take any shortcuts, that he can really get this right for the long term. And also there were a lot of questions from the audience about F1 Academy and women in motorsport. And Jamie did a great job. She's such a role model and an ambassador for motorsports. It was amazing to hear them.
Yeah, such a cool event. I guess one more thing before we move on from Thursday night was at the Lewis event. There was a lot of discussion about Taylor Swift and Lewis. We posted one of those clips on our TikTok, and I'm sure many others are floating around the internet, but he was basically saying that he's not necessarily a Swiftie. He loves the song Anti-Hero, but he really respects what Taylor has done as a businesswoman. So we liked that kind of great, recognizing great moment.
But we are waiting to see Taylor at a race. So maybe when she's done touring, she'll have the energy. It'll be amazing.
And if you haven't checked out Luke Smith's piece in The Athletic about Taylor Swift and the U.S. Grand Prix, it's definitely worth a read. Super interesting parallels that he draws.
Okay, and the last thing I'm going to say about Taylor Swift, because I've become the group's de facto Swiftie, it seems like I'm a new Swiftie and I'm obsessed.
The de facto, group's de facto Swiftie.
As in new. Guys, she is, for Travis's birthday, she rented out the entirety of the Monza track for him for $250,000.
To do what? Like drive?
To just like get a driving lesson and drive around.
In what kind of car?
I think like a Porsche. I don't know, but isn't that incredible? Damn. Talk about true love. Okay, next time I need a $250,000 birthday gift.
Well, I'm also still waiting for Taylor to show up at one of these races.
So we shall see. Okay, let's move on to Friday. Friday was pretty insane. Honestly, the best Friday ever. Again, thank you so much to Danielle and everyone at Red Bull and VCarb. So first of all, the F1 gods were looking down on us because we had a bit of a pickle with traffic. We made it in time. We were sprinting across the parking lot, and we made it to our VCarb garage tour like 60 seconds late. We were just
not
like
unscathed, we will say.
We survived. So we got there and we had an amazing tour guide. We had an amazing group that we were with. The tour guide was super friendly, extremely knowledgeable. The cars were kind of out and getting prepped for FP1. So we got to get up close and personal with Yuki's car. And we got so many fun facts about the steering wheel. I think, Tiggy, you're going to do a reel on this, but it's so cool. But basically, there's a secret way to communicate with the driver. There's a secret way for the driver to communicate with the pit wall. And so instead of pressing the radio button to speak, which of course everyone can hear, including the other teams, drivers will move the tire dial to particular numbers to like send coded messages to the team. And then apparently back at headquarters, VCarb has a team of decoders that try to decode what other teams are doing when the other drivers are moving the tire dial. So very interesting and something that we had never heard of or knew about. And so that was really, really amazing and a good start to the garage tour.
That's some, World War II espionage level type stuff happening in F1. I love it.
That was an amazing fun fact. And then we got to walk around the paddock a bit, which was so fun. There was a pickleball court set up and lots of activity overall. Drivers were walking around in their race suits, getting to the garage for FP1. Most of them walk really heads down, focus mode, sipping those long, flexible straw water bottles, usually with a media person next to them. But it's interesting seeing even the difference from photos from today in the paddock versus on Friday. On Friday, it really seemed like it was kind of business mode. They go about their business, not really be stopped while they were walking in between. But today, it really seemed like they even needed to get security to kind of move from hospitality into the garage.
Yeah. It's crazy how these drivers, it's like their work environment and they can't move 2 feet without being mobbed, which is cool for them, but also probably gets old. Okay, but we have to talk about the peak experience of our lives so far. So we got to watch the first part of FP1 in the Red Bull garage. And as we said on Instagram, there were no photos allowed, but we do have so many fun facts and observations to share. So the viewing station is in the back of the garage, right in the center. And I think it's a little different in every garage, but this is how it was for Red Bull. You get headphones that play the feed from both sides of the garage. So you're hearing Max's engineers, Checo's engineers, Max and Checo. You're kind of hearing it all on top of each other, which is super interesting. We were, of course, drinking Red Bulls. They gave us that before we went in, which was fun. And there was just a lot of chatter going on the radio. And most of it was kind of giving the deltas between other drivers, talking about track position in terms of clean air. And then engine mode switching, kind of engineers.
A lot of that.
Yeah, discussing when to switch to different modes. And Sarah and I stood on the Mac side, Chessa, of course, on the Checo side. But we had some really fun observations on the Mac side. Sarah, you share what we saw.
Yes, we were so fascinated to just see everything that was going on. We were looking all over the place, didn't know where to look. But on Max's side, one big thing we noticed was that GP, Max's race engineer, was totally dialed in. He was in the garage and not on the pit wall. So it seems that maybe for practice, the race engineers are in the garage and then move out to the pit wall for the actual sessions. He was facing the left side wall. He was really hunched over a laptop, focused on the data the whole session, not even really watching the screens, but really just looking at the data and the lap times. He had to stay so focused, even when there was a ton of activity around him getting the pit stop ready. I think one thing that struck me was just how limited the space is when it's actually in session and there's about 10 to 15 people on each side of the garage. It is cramped in there, especially once they're bringing a car in. So GP was speaking very frequently. That's another thing that struck me. He was telling Max all of the cars coming up behind or in front of him and giving a countdown. So it'd be something like Hülkenberg passing in 3, 2, 1. And it made me appreciate more. We've talked about this before of how when people get impeding penalties or in trouble for impeding, especially in quali, how a lot of the times we've kind of said, oh, maybe it was the team's fault for not warning the driver. Seems like the race engineer has to be super on top of it. And the drivers are really relying on them to tell them when to get out of the way in either practice or quali.
We also saw Helmut Marko sitting there to GP's left. So that was interesting to see another personality that we hear so much about in the flesh. On Checo's side, he had a Mexican flag on his side, like a little one taped to the wall. And that was awesome. And it was the same thing. His engineer was super dialed in on his side of the garage. I saw a scrutineer poking around and monitoring some data feeds, and basically like he has a bib that says scrutineer, and it's like a scrutinizing engineer. They kind of like can just pop into any garage they want to kind of see what's up and make sure everything is according to the law of the land, the FIA law of the land. One thing that stuck out to us, and I guess we kind of saw this the first time or got the magnitude of this the first time when we were in Austria and we got to poke in and see sort of like the engineering room for the McLarens, but there was so much data, so many screens, charts, graphs, tables, like everything. It was unbelievable. And then we saw our friend Callum, who is on Max's pit crew and engineer, him and like the rest of the engineers were just sitting on the tires watching the session. And then you can see them start to get ready for a pit stop. And then when the pit stop was imminent, like everyone sprang up. It was like everyone had their positions. It was so well executed. And they were like stretching and warming up. They pulled off an amazing 2.5 second pit stop. And then they pulled Max into the garage. Like they hike him up on like a hydraulic lift that we see. And then they push him into the garage. They immediately dropped like a giant bag of dry ice into the cockpit for him. And overall, just an insane experience. Like we walked out of there and like kind of were in silence, went over into a corner in the paddock and like started furiously writing notes because we wanted to make sure we didn't forget everything. It was overall just incredible.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me seeing them do practice pit stops during the practice session. Yeah. I guess that makes sense that you would practice that because it's such a key part of the race. But it was kind of cool that they like had Max pull in, do the pit stop, time it. They radioed. They said, okay, that was a 2.5 second stop. And then they bring him in. So there was no real need to do that except for to practice, which I thought was really cool. So that was an amazing, amazing day. And again, thank you so much to Danielle, Red Bull, VCarb, the whole crew. So for Saturday, we had just a big bopping around the track day. We were sitting in the turn 9 grandstands, which we highly recommend. We had not really experienced that far side of the track before, and it was amazing. So from turn 9, those grandstands, you can see all of the sweepers in the turns 6 through 9 area, plus the hairpin at turn 11 and a bit of the DRS zone on the other side. Because it's elevated, you can just see so much of the track. And there are also really great spots for GA viewing at turns 6 and 7 and 11, just that whole section, really. Also really good food, concessions, tacos, cold brew. I think we got shawarma. There was like a lot going on.
Cider, we had it all. Cold brew for Sarah, tacos for Tiggy.
Yes.
I got so, so, so excited that there was cold brew. And whenever we were excited about something, Chess would just say, race of the people. So like, there's cold brew. And Chess would say, it's the race of the people.
Maybe we should trademark this term, because if people start to say it, I'm going to be like, guys, this was us. This was all us. So
wait, I think it is something they actually say.
Was yeah, it I'm us? Not sure if we can claim that.
Yeah, I think
it is.
Shoot,
I thought I came up with it.
No.
Damn, thanks for talking. I appreciate it. Well, here I was feeling all important. Anyways, it was a really great spot to be. We hung out at the cantina between the sprint and quali. Had the best time with you all at the meetup. It was so fun to just see everyone, hear everyone's experiences, whether it was their first, second, third, fourth F1 race, kind of like where everyone was sitting, what their weekend experience had been like. Everyone had incredible merch and accessories, of course. We got some beautiful bracelets from one of our listeners, so that really made our day. And yeah, just it's always such a highlight to meet you all, and it was just a highlight of the weekend. And so we went right from – oh, go ahead, Tig.
I have to say the fashion at these Grand Prix is incredible. Like the number of shirts that people have that are so interesting and creative and fun. Like someone showed up in a Leo Leclerc, the dog shirt with the pass on it. And they're always just such fun merch and unofficial merch shirts. And so Saturday night, this was crazy. We went to a clearance event. They were launching their double serum, which they sent us beforehand. And it actually is amazing. This is not sponsored. I just have started to use it and it's been so nice on the skin. But the theme for this event was black tie Western cowboy. The outfits were iconic. Chessa already wants to use this theme for her future wedding someday, which was amazing. We had a lot of cowboy hats, cowboy boots, really fun outfits. There was this huge drone show that lit up the skyline. It formed checkered flags. It spelled out Clarins. We were freaking out. We were like, how is this even physically possible? I was so curious how it works technologically, but it was so beautiful right over the Austin City skyline. And then, of course, there were incredible celeb sightings. So Miles Teller and Kaylee were there, Shaun White and Nina Dobrev. It seems like they were just having a great time and enjoyed the drone show. They were kind of dancing, bopping around. On the F1 side of the house, Kelly Piquet, we met her. She's Max's girlfriend, for those who don't know. She was friendly. She seemed like she was having a good time. She was also looking stunning in an amazing Ralph Lauren Western-themed outfit. So it was really fun to talk to her. We were just asking her kind of what her plans were for the race tomorrow, because it was Saturday night, and what other races she's going to throughout the rest of the season. And she loves the Monaco race because that's home. So that was a fun little tidbit. And then Tiffany Cromwell was also there, Valtteri Bottas's girlfriend. So that was just amazing. I think the whole time we were kind of pinching ourselves that we were even invited and there, but it was so fun. And so
it was cool. There are so many reasons to learn a new language, but our favorite is for traveling. Of course, we travel all the time for F1 races, but also just for personal and fun travel as well. And we always like to feel better equipped when heading to a new country. When it comes to race weekends and the logistics, knowing the language really, really helps. But also just knowing the language helps us deepen our cultural appreciation for new places. So even if you're not traveling anytime soon, it can be a fun hobby that actually has lots of studied cognitive benefits. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program and the perfect place to start. With over 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered, Rosetta Stone is the place to learn a language fast. It's designed for fast language acquisition and long-term retention. Plus, with their app, it's super convenient to learn. So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Paddock Project listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Women's health is really, really important to us, and we think that balanced hormones really play a key role in that. One thing that we've been loving is the supplement Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, and that's a company that's committed to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains adaptogens, science-backed herbal extracts that help the body adapt to stressors like hormone changes that can happen naturally throughout a woman's life. We love it because it helps us maintain optimal hormone levels and supports our mood and general well-being, especially in our crazy day-to-day times. There is a reason that Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code F1RTHEGIRLS for 15% off today. Like most people, we love a great deal, but what we don't love is jumping through a million hoops just to end up saving a few dollars, especially when it comes to wireless plans. There's so many promos and offers out there, but they do really make it hard to get good quality savings. With Mint Mobile, it really is so easy though. For just $15 a month, you can get a wireless plan when you get a 3-month plan. And the website and activation process are so seamless. Honestly, the longest part of this process is going to be the time that you spend on hold trying to break up with your old provider. To get started, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. There you can see that right now all 3-month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your old phone number along with all of your existing contacts. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. That's mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning F1 championships is sometimes also what you need to keep your car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Jumping into Sunday and our race recap. Wow. On top of an incredible first few days, this race was just unbelievable. So happy that everyone who was at COTA and braving the heat got to see this. This was kind of one of my favorite races of at least the latter part of the season. I love that we had so much going on. You know that it's a great race when the winner is shown for approximately 90 seconds of the TV coverage. They're joking on F1 TV of, oh, he's getting the Max 2023 treatment of no one even discussing Charles the entire race. So that was very, very interesting to see. I have so many thoughts on the Max Lando battle, but as a Max fan and a Red Bull fan, I was just so happy to see him back in fighting form and showing what he's made of and showing why he is a 3-time world champion and why I think it was quick for a lot of people, Lando, McLaren, everyone, to be kind of expecting that they could just easily be battling back from a 50-point deficit to Max, because he was showing today when even when he's not in the best car, he is can place the car perfectly corner after corner after corner in a way that drivers like Lando aren't able to. And that is why Max is going to win, and why I do feel I do feel vindicated in the sense that I just felt like it got super overblown of, oh, the driver's championship is wide open, when it's kind of like it's a 60-point gap to Max Verstappen with 8 races left. Like, I don't know if it's – I get that kind of it's marketing, but I don't know. It always felt like such a stretch to be saying, like, the championship is wide open.
I also think it's, like, F1 in general. I mean, people get excited about storylines, especially when it's a new storyline. And to be honest, like, the momentum has been and was with McLaren. So I can see why people maybe – latched onto that a little bit, because it's nice to have some excitement. But yeah, I was so impressed by the absolute masterclass of defense that Max put on, just like putting his car in the right spot, literally by the millimeter, I feel like, every single corner, turn after turn, lap after lap. But in general, what a race. I just feel like this one fires on all cylinders, both for fans and for the drivers and the racing. I will say justice for the Ferrari coverage, which I feel like totally got lost amidst the Max Lando drama, because this was huge for them. It was their first 1-2 since 2006, I think they said, and also just really well executed by the team and by both drivers, and with very little drama. I know Chess's hot take was that there was going to be some team orders drama, but I'm selfishly glad that like we didn't have that, because I felt like it was such a feel-good afternoon for them. Mercedes really had a tough weekend. It was cool to see George go from pit lane to P6, but outside of that, it was just so rough for them. And we'll talk about this, I'm sure, in MVPs, but just legendary rookie drives with both Liam Lawson and Colapinto scoring points and beating their teammates, who are both very good drivers. So much excitement.
Yeah, I think for me, all of the things that you guys just said, retweet. One thing that was also interesting is this was our first safety car in 10 races, which I think we have taken for granted. So yeah, there was no drama in terms of like amongst the drivers and stuff, but we had a lot of track limits issues. We had a lot of spin outs. So there was a little bit of drama on the driving front, so to speak. And the safety car was definitely interesting and threw a little bit of a wrench in there. And also we saw a lot of 5-second time penalties throughout this race. So it was just exciting on all fronts. But let's get into our MVPs. Tiggy, what did you think?
I got to give it to Ferrari. Like I said, justice for them on the coverage, but also they were just on all weekend. The strategy was really good in the race and they were executing the pit stops really well, which as we've seen with Ferrari isn't always super consistent. So I was super happy for them. And I think, yeah, the car is looking good. And then Liam Lawson, got to give him a shout out to score points and beat Yuki in his first race with a full-time seat with so much pressure on his shoulders. He just really got out there and got the job done. So I think both of them.
Those are great ones. For me, have to say Max, no surprise there. We looked this up because we were wondering about this, but he hasn't – I know the sprint isn't a traditional win, but he hasn't been – a first place finisher since Spain in June, which again, in Max terminology of the past couple years, is a long time, right? It is centuries. So he was even kind of joking about it, like, oh, it feels good to be back a little bit. But it was great to see just a reminder, which he won't let anyone forget for too long, of why he is so dominant. And again, you're kind of thinking during the race, where is Checo? Like, he's racing in the P6 to P8 territory, and Max is always making himself in the conversation and in podium contention, even when he does not have the fastest car, is at a major disadvantage for various reasons. He was having tire issues. Lando had fresher tires and a faster car, and just Max drove amazingly. So that was great to see. And then to add on to Lawson, Colapinto, the talent from these rookies is unbelievable. It makes me really excited for what we're going to see next year.
Hope Colapinto gets a seat.
I know, I was talking to someone during the meetup, and it must be – like, it's exciting for Liam to come in midway through the season. The commentators called them part-timers. So it's exciting for him to be a part-timer coming in, knowing that the seat that he's entering is up for grabs, whereas for Colapinto, it's so not the case, and it must be, like, a completely different mental game. But that's my MVPs, those two rookies. I'm so happy that they were in the points.
I do think, hopefully, even if Colapinto doesn't get the Sauber/Audi seat, that hopefully at a minimum – he'll get a really great reserve driver role and be in a serious conversation for 2026.
And see him back in the sport. I see that.
It's just tough. I mean, with everything changing so much in 2026, that's another wild card. And I just feel like reserve driver can only be so helpful in terms of training, especially when the regulations are changing so much. But I do hope that he's around. Okay, how about for LVPs? Sarah, what do you have?
I have kind of a combo, Lewis and McLaren. Lewis, it was tough to watch. A Q1 exit and a huge off and beach in the gravel during the race, which really was kind of an unforced error. Unforced in the sense that there wasn't contact being made, but potentially forced in the sense that it was very similar to George's accident during quali. It seems like there were some fundamental issues with car handling that they were dealing with, but that was overall super tough to watch. And then for McLaren, we have not talked about this yet, but I think not having Lando give the place back was a huge mistake. He would have at least been able to fight for it in the last couple laps, and it just, I think, left everything off on a really difficult note for Lando and the whole team.
Yeah, that was so tough. I feel like on the Lewis front, the one silver lining for him is that Ferrari was looking so good. I know we say this every time Ferrari has a good weekend, but if there's one thing he can take from this weekend, it's that Ferrari car is looking fast. For me, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it was an LVP, but I always hate to see the old veterans kind of bullying the rookies a little bit.
Yeah, that's so true.
Bullying Lawson to a certain degree and calling, first of all, he called it an AlphaTauri, which, sir, get with the times. But like calling the AlphaTauri out there a quote idiot, like referring to Lawson, and then they were going toe-to-toe in the race, which Liam really held his own, and the announcers were super stoked to see him having the guts that he did, fighting a really, really incredible world champion caliber driver. So yeah, I didn't love Alonso's comments about Lawson, but I respect Liam for kind of fighting back on track and just putting it out there.
Retweet. My LVP is hard to say, but I think it was just Mercedes. Not because I have any sort of ill will against them, but they seemed like they were going to promise so much with these new upgrades. They were so excited, and it really kind of crashed and burned for them. So I hope all the best, but I'm really sad to see how this weekend turned out for them.
Kind of brings me to my hot take, which crashed and burned harder than any hot take I think I've ever had in my life. I said Lewis would win.
Your heart was in the right place.
It was not really there at all weekend.
Q1 exit in the DNF. It is actually harder to think how it could be
harder to get any worse than
like
that.
Simply put, you couldn't. Mine was really hot. I had Liam top five, so I'm gonna take Liam in the points, and the P9 is pretty good, but yeah, did not get that one. I had a Ferrari battle, like team orders. Did not see that, but we had them one and two. So at least they were running together, kind of. They were 8 seconds apart, but still. So let's jump into the weekend. So for practice, of course, the highlight of FP1 was literally being in the garage. But overall, it was actually a pretty exciting session. Lewis had a spin out, and we could hear on the radios that he was really frustrated. Couldn't seem to get a good handle on the car, even with their new upgrades. So that was a little bit of foreshadowing. And this was a really important session for Liam. This was his first time at this track and in his new car this weekend. So a lot of important time for him to get kind of a grip on the data and see how the car felt. And in the end, we had the Ferraris closing out the session on top, which was also some nice foreshadowing. Carlos P1, Charles P2, and only 0.2 off of him. And then we had Max Lando and Oscar.
And then we jumped right into sprint quali, because since this is a sprint weekend, we only got one practice session before jumping into sprint quali on Friday. So in Q1, Colapinto solidly beat out Albon here, who had a crazy spin and an awesome recovery. That ended up being a huge storyline, I think, this weekend and recently, is just how incredibly Colapinto has done compared to Albon as a rookie who's never driven the car in race trim and never driven on most of these circuits before. And in Q1, so out we had Piastri, which was a huge shocker. This was due to a time deletion for track limits, and then Ocon, Albon, Bottas, and Joe. So also a big disappointment for Albon.
For Q2, this was tough for Liam, who got eliminated, but we love to see him pushing all out. Both Haas cars were through to Q3, which was a huge surprise and a pleasant one. And for cuts, we had Checo, Liam, Pierre Gasly, Stroll, and Alonso, who had no legal lap time for the session. And then for Q3, there was a yellow flag at the top of the session for a Colapinto spin. And the final order was Max on top by only 0.12 of a second, finally looking on good form, which was exciting, especially because we had been in the garage so recently. And then we had Russell, Leclerc, Norris, Sainz, Hülkenberg, Hamilton, K-Mag, Tsunoda, and Colapinto.
Colapinto. For the sprint, Max had a pretty dominant win here after starting from pole. I think he needed that to get his mojo back, his first win, his first quote-unquote win since Spain in June, which was a big deal for him. Lando had an amazing start, launched from P4 to P2. He did not do that today. He looked set for a comfortable P2, but then the big story was Sainz, who had some huge overtakes and ended up passing Lando for P2 with a few laps to go after Lando had a lockup. And George was running in the top four until about midway through the sprint, and he just got smoked by the Ferraris. We, like, physically in the stands watching it, we could see that he just didn't have the pace. So Charles slid into P4 here, and then George finished P5, Lewis in P6, and then I think the big excitement here was both of the Haas drivers rounded out the points in P7 and P8 with K-Mag ahead of Hülkenberg.
And then we had Quali on Saturday afternoon. So the really big news of Q1 here, which we talked about, was Lewis getting knocked out with a P19 finish. It was brutal. He had a tough middle sector, could not get a handle on the car. He was so disappointed in the post-race interviews. And it was rare to see him kind of be so dejected and not have kind of that classic trademark Lewis optimism. He said it was just terrible. And he's been so strong at this track before too. So it was tough to watch.
I felt bad. I think it was Lawrence Barreto maybe who was interviewing him. And
yeah, it was tough.
These poor announcers, when drivers have a bad session, have totally to like try and get it out of them. Like, what happened? And Lewis was just like, I mean, I'm starting P19, mate. Like, it wasn't great. I just felt bad for Lawrence Barreto, who was trying to be like, can you tell us anything?
Sam, that's a tough job. This person is objectively miserable because they had a horrible quali. And then the first question kind of has to be, tough quali, happened, how are bro? We feeling?
What happened? She's like, well.
Yeah. For the rest of Q1, we did also see a lot of lap times getting deleted for track limits. That kind of was a theme of the weekend. So out we had Albon, Colapinto, Bottas, Hamilton, and Joe. For Q2, Max stayed pretty much at the top of the timesheets here. The exciting development was Gasly in the Alpine looking quite fast, making it through to Q3, and also K-Mag in the Haas making it through. So out for Q2, we had Yuki, Hülkenberg, Ocon, Stroll, and Liam Lawson.
For Q3, a pretty standard quali session until the 11th hour when Russell crashed out right at the end of the session, bringing out the yellow flags and ending the session early. And a lot of drivers weren't able to get their final flying laps in, which was unfortunate, especially for Max, because it looked like he had the pace to secure P1. I think he was purple sector 1, green sector 2, and then he was so close to finishing the lap before this flag got thrown. In the end, we had Lando on pole, followed by Max, Charles, Carlos, Piastri, George, Hamilton, and so on. But Gasly was a highlight right after Hamilton.
For the race, overall, some background. Brutally hot. Not a single cloud in the sky. I think everyone watching this weekend could get a sense of just how hot it was Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday, we were really feeling the heat and the direct sunlight when there weren't clouds. So the drivers, I just cannot imagine being in a fireproof suit in those conditions.
Ugh, hence one, the dry ice.
Yes. One thing that was a big question mark was this track was repaved this over the course of the past year and has a new surface. So kind of open questions whether it would be a two-stop or if a one-stop could be possible. So almost everyone started on mediums except for a few drivers on hard towards the back of the pack.
For the start, turn here one is absolutely thrilling. It's up a huge incline. So the cars can go 3 wide. The crowd is there watching it. And boy, did this turn one deliver. So Lando did get a great launch off the line and entered turn one ahead of Max. But pole position is on the outside line here. And so Max was able to get right up on the inside. They both drifted towards the right end of the track. And that allowed – I love when this happens in Formula One. That allowed the sleeper cells, in this case, the Ferraris, to jump up. And Leclerc zoomed through to P1 on the inside. Carlos slotted into P3, and then Lando dropped to 4th. So Charles and Lando basically just flip-flopped. Lando was complaining on the radio about Max having gone too deep in the corner and running him off, but the stewards did not investigate that. And then meanwhile, towards the back, Albon tapped Ocon and caused him to do a full spin, but it was deemed a racing incident. I think it was minor damage, and both continued onwards.
It's always so fun with the starts when your eyes are locked on the first two and then P3 or P4 comes out of nowhere. And it's just like so fun. Hamilton and Lawson also had amazing starts. They were both up 5 places by lap 2, but then this was the tragedy. On lap 7, Lewis had a huge off. Seemingly an unforced error, was beached in the gravel, which caused a full safety car. And like we were mentioning, the first in 10 races since the Canadian Grand Prix. I guess maybe that I was going to say I was at the Montreal race. So sorry, everybody. And sorry, especially to Hamilton. But we had the safety car restart. So Charles waited until super late after turn 19 to launch. And then Max was so close to getting him. But once Charles got out ahead, he got out of DRS range pretty quickly. Liam and Alonso had an iconic battle, as we were saying, after their argument on Saturday. Just really incredible and brave driving from Liam, his first race ever on this circuit, managing multiple overtakes, of a world champion. So that was pretty amazing.
That was where I think the announcers on F1 TV came up with the part-timer thing, because then Colapinto and Alonso had a battle later on and they said, oh, it's Alonso versus the part-timers. And Colapinto and Lawson both really held their own and had some big overtakes. And the announcers were making a great point that Alonso is one of the craftiest drivers on the grid and extremely difficult to overtake. That's part of why these rookie performances were just so impressive. A couple other things early on in the race that end up did not cause as many problems as they could have. Sainz reported that he had no power on corner exits and could smell fuel, and he sounded quite concerned. It seemed like a retirement was imminent. Incredibly, he was able to keep Lando 2 seconds behind him throughout all this. And then the pit wall also reported to Max that he was having car problems and to hang on as best as he could. They're both able to make it through. Sainz had to do a bit of a self-fix on the steering wheel with some engine modes that they told him. That seemed to resolve the problem at least enough to get a P2.
And our radio of the week was from Max. Well, at least that was fun, which we got to love his like dry sense of humor. Got to give it to him. Okay, let's talk about the teams for McLaren. I think it was a tough race for Lando after losing P1, going into that first turn of the race, falling back into P4. It kind of does, in my mind, it kind of feels like this is something that he always struggles with off the start. And I think for him, missing out on P1 and then also having Max finish ahead of him does feel kind of like a nail in the coffin for his World Drivers Championship run, which I think Sarah never really believed in the first place. But I think what was good for the team, though, was Piastri being able to maintain his P5 position. So getting some points there and helping the team in terms of their constructors battle.
But we have to talk about the big drama, the late race battle between Max and Lando for that final podium position. So things started heating up, starting on lap 47 as Lando tried to overtake Max, got super close, like within 0.3 seconds. And even though Lando had the pace in the McLaren, Max had impeccable defensive positioning to hold on to that P3. Lando did overtake Max, but it was somewhat questionable since it looked like he could have gained an advantage by going off track. But he and the team over the radio seemed very confident that he was in the lead at the apex. So he did not give the position back, continued to defend against Max. And eventually, unfortunately, that risk did not pay off. He got a 5-second time penalty that I think he was not super happy about. But yeah, I think it was a bit of a risky move. But it's the kind of thing where I guess the team is in a hard position, because if they do think he's ahead at the apex and they tell him to give it back, it's the sort of situation where you'll never know if it was actually if FIA was going to go after it, you know. So I think it's hard.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And it seems like Lando's ire was kind of more directed at the team than at Max, because his immediate statement on the cooldown lap was, oh, then I guess we should have given the place back, because Lando doesn't have all the information. He doesn't have the 360 visual, and the team is the one with all of the data and all of the camera angles. Even though they are still making split time decisions, they at least have the benefit of all of the camera angles. And so it seems like Lando was upset that it felt like the team made the wrong call. But then Oscar noted after the race in an interview that it just felt like inconsistent stewarding to them, because he felt like he got a 5-second penalty in the sprint for a super similar move when he was on Max's side of the equation. So definitely some kind of complaints about the stewarding, but overall it seems like a mistake from McLaren that they didn't give that place back.
Yeah, and it's F1. There will always be some sort of drama around the stewarding. Jumping into Red Bull, before we talk about their race performance this weekend, we have to talk a little bit about some news that was surrounding the team heading into the weekend, specifically about the device on their car that they had in Singapore that allowed them for an easy adjustment of the car's ride height. So although the device is inaccessible once the car is fully assembled, it does enable adjustments when the car is stripped down for setup changes. And this had raised some concerns for Park Ferrum, because it potentially gave them some competitive advantage to adjust the car's ride height during Park Ferrum, which they can't do. And so the FIA kind of issued a statement outlawing these devices, and Red Bull has worked to be in compliance and made changes to ensure full compliance. So it was a little bit spicy there. I think Zach Brown made some comments kind of being like, this is a clear violation and we need to get to the bottom of it. And it seems like the FIA did, and Red Bull is now in compliance. But it was interesting news heading into the weekend.
And Christian Horner, of course, said, it sounds like someone's making comments because they're trying to distract from what's going on in their own house. So
oh, yeah,
the Christian Toto battle has now moved on to the Christian Zach Brown battle.
For the rest of Red Bull, it was just overall great for Max this weekend. The sprint win was really important for him. It was huge for the championship. And to Tiki's point earlier about momentum, I think just symbolically it was huge for Max to feel like he outperformed Lando this race, as opposed to just Lando slowly but steadily chipping away from his lead, which is what Max said. Oh, it's nice to gain in the constructors. I mean, sorry, in the driver's championship for once, instead of losing, like it feels like all we've been doing recently. I also really thought, I wonder what you all think, if this is because of Max and Lando's relationship, but Max did not criticize Lando at all and just said on the radio, kind of matter of fact in real time, oh, he gained advantage off track, and then said again, he gained advantage off track. The GP assured him that the stewards were looking into it. And then the post-race interview with Julian Palmer, he just said, I'm sure we have different opinions. The stewards are looking into it. I agree with the stewards. It was it felt very kind of nice by Max.
I think he knew he was in the right.
I agree, but I also feel like, and I think I texted this to you guys, like I'm not sure their friendship can withstand this season or another one
you
like
think?
It.
Yeah.
It feels tough. Like I agree Max was being kind of polite and diplomatic there, and maybe he wouldn't have been if it had been in someone else, but it does feel like it's putting strain on their relationship.
I'm sure, yeah.
For Ferrari, like we said, just unreal weekend for them, especially since they are one of the very few teams that didn't bring upgrades this weekend. And Sainz, interestingly, was looking like the dominant driver all weekend. But of course, we did have Charles bringing the energy for the impressive performance on Sunday, starting with that incredible lunge off the racing line to take the lead. But we really have to give it to the strategy side of things.
Yeah. I think
listening to the drivers and executing well-timed pit stops. For Carlos, his strategic pit stop allowed him to undercut Max and then get P2 in the race. So just bravo all around for Ferrari.
For Mercedes, like we talked about, just a devastating weekend for the team. It's almost like Lewis jinxed it when he said he was already looking forward to next weekend after the Saturday quali session, because things did get worse from there. And when he got in the car, he said on the radio, quote, this is so far back, which felt very reminiscent of when Mercedes first started struggling with porpoising in, what was it, 2022?
Yeah.
And he said, is there even a point for this position? Sometimes his comments are just quite interesting sometimes. But George also got a 5-second penalty for forcing Bottas off the track. George was upset. Toto got on the radio and called it a total joke. But overall, everyone was really proud of George, because George did drive from a pit lane start to P6. So it was really impressive work from him overall on Sunday.
So for Aston Martin, let's recap really quickly what this whole drama was between Alonso and Liam. So after the sprint, Alonso looked very visibly upset with Liam. Like there's photos of, not like screaming, but like a photo that looked like they were in a tiff. And allegedly Liam squeezed Alonso during a battle for 16th position. Alonso got on the radio and said, man, the AlphaTauri is such an idiot, which I really hate. I hate the word idiot. I hate that he just forgot that it's now V-carb. Like it just was not a good vibe. But it also kind of seemed like Alonso retaliated a little bit during quali. And then after quali, Liam is such a savage. He said, quote, he said he would screw me. And I guess he kept his word. He was really upset. I'm not sure why we were just racing for P16. So
when the young rookie is more mature than the veteran, yeah, it's like, 41-year-old.
I'll take the high road.
Yeah. And then Liam was so diplomatic. In the post-race interview, he was saying, oh, yeah, good to have a battle. I respect him so much. He's such a champion, amazing driver. Like, he was so respectful.
What a legend.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of V-carb, Liam starting back of the grid due to taking on a new power unit component was a bummer, but he did have an incredible race to pick up points in a P9 finish. So it wasn't just that he, like, started P9 and kept it there. Like, he started in the back and drove up to P9. So
and even just keeping P9 would have been so impressive.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
So even more so. Unfortunately, on the other side of things, not a great race for Yuki. He was furious on the radio that he dropped behind Liam. He kept saying, like, how did that happen? How did that happen? Tell me how that happened. Plus, he had to serve a 5-second time penalty for forcing another driver off track, which is sort of what the V-carb engineer was trying to allude to on the radio when Yuki kept asking that. and then with 15 laps to go, he had a spin out and lost a few more positions. So just not the best for Yuki, unfortunately.
For Williams, we had an insane run from Colapinto, which we said, who had a 38-plus lap stint on his first tire, which was hard. And then he managed to finish P10 with points ahead of Albon. He also had that incredible battle with Alonso and overtook him, which was a true battle of old versus new talent, or veteran versus new talent. And he also almost got fastest lap, which I was very impressed by.
Go Colapinto. This is a very interesting storyline for the rest of the season. Is going to see how Albon and Colapinto are stacking up here, because Colapinto's really been keeping Albon on his toes so far. For Alpine, they had an awesome livery, truly one of our all-time favorite special liveries. We thought it was so great. They did a collaboration with Xbox to celebrate the upcoming release of the Indiana Jones video game. Gasly had an amazing quali and was so excited. It really seemed like it was going to be a top-tier weekend for them. But sadly, he had a very slow stop in the race. I think he also got a penalty. There were kind of cascading issues during the race, which were super unfortunate. So there were no top 10 points for either driver. Although interestingly, Ocon did get fastest lap on softs at the end of the race, which is kind of funny.
But fly high that fastest lap point next year.
Yeah.
For the last two teams, Stake Sauber, just unfortunately not a lot to say here. Again, it's the first season that Bottas has yet to score a single point. So I'm really, really hoping for him, especially, that he can change that. And we're still waiting for an announcement on his future. For Haas, we had mixed results here from the drivers. Nico Hülkenberg scored a solid eighth place finish after a good sprint, but I was one of the best for the team at this track ever. So lots to celebrate for Haas here. I guess Toyota is giving them good vibes, so I love that. K-Mag narrowly missed out on points, finishing 11th, but overall Haas looked pretty good this weekend.
For standings for the Drivers' Championship, we now have Max extending his lead. He's at 354. Lando's at 297, Charles 275, Oscar 247, and Carlos at 215. So yeah, now there's not a ton of space between Charles and Lando. I don't think.
22 points. That is a one race. That could be a one race swing.
Especially for
No one's even talking about it. And it's half the gap of Lando to Max. Like,
justice for Max. Relax.
And to round out constructors, we have McLaren with 544, Red Bull with 504, Ferrari with 496, Mercedes with 344, and Aston Martin with 86.
Next question. Ferrari's only 8 points back from Red Bull. Could they take P2 and Red Bull ends up P3 in constructors?
They could. I'm actually shocked to see how close that score is. Wow.
Same.
Could you imagine winning driver's championship and Red Bull coming third?
That's all
Checo. I would love.
That would be a nail in the coffin for Checo. No?
100%. Yeah. Wow. I would love to look up stats on when/if that has ever happened, that a team finished third in constructors and had the driver's champion.
That's so brutal. All right. Well, let's move on to the land of Checo. We're going to give a Mexican Grand Prix preview super quickly. Always such a fun race. We were here 2 years ago, had the most insane weekend attending in person, just genuinely one of the most fun tracks, best people, best energy. It's always so fun to go to a race where there's so much hometown driver pride. So super stoked amazing. For this.
And we were with my dad. Well, I'm Mexican and my dad's Mexican, and he was crying. Like, he was so proud. So the circuit is the Autódromo Hermanos Rodríguez. It's 71 laps, 4.3 kilometers, two DRS zones. The final corner is called Peraltada. It's at turn 17. It's very, very fast and scary, even back in the day. So they have made some adjustments, and it's also slightly banked, which means the drivers can go even faster. So look out for that. It's also very high altitude in Mexico City, so some technical adjustments will be made there for the cars. And the iconic section where we sat is Foro del Sol. It's a kind of a series of slow, winding turns through the grandstand. It's super cool. It's where Taylor did her concert, in case anyone is wondering. So look out for that as well.
For some history and background, this track has a really long history. It was actually designed by a student in the 1950s for his thesis project. It was built in 1959. It had its first Grand Prix in 1963. And it's actually named after Ricardo and Pedro Rodriguez, who were two brothers that tragically died in racing car accidents. That's how the circuit got its name.
It's so sad. For last year's race, exciting race for Max last year, most of them were, but he had an amazing start from third on the grid, so that was different from starting from pole. He used the tow from Charles to take the lead right away heading into turn one, and in a tragic turn of events, God, I remember this from last year, we had that collision between Checo and Charles, which caused Checo to DNF at his home race, forced Charles into an early pit stop to repair damage. And for most of the race, we did have Max out front, followed by Charles and Lewis. K-Mag then crashed into the barriers, which brought out a red flag. So on the restart, Hamilton was able to pass Charles for second. And then we had Sainz finish P4. Lando had an amazing recovery drive, going from 17th to finish 5th. And then George P6 and Daniel Ricciardo P7. It was a good race for him last year.
All right, hi, King.
Hot takes.
Jinx. Sarah.
Oh man, this is crazy. So can I say something that isn't my actual hot take?
Just say it. It's your hot take.
It's a hot take. It's allowed to be hot.
Okay. Checo wins.
Whoa. You won up to me. You took my Checo podium and you delivered a win.
That's what I'm saying. Is yours is a good hot take because mine is never gonna happen.
Jimmy's hot take really didn't happen this weekend, so everyone needs to have something that's super spicy.
I it's just hopeful, but in the event this does end up being Checo's last year, he has such incredible hometown support. He's done so much for motorsports in Latin America. It was amazing seeing his support in Austin. I just saw a video they posted actually of him going out and thanking the fans who were there waiting for him, aww, all Checo fans, right, packed by the Red Bull garage. And so to give him and the fans that would be incredible. Maybe it won't be his last race there, but I feel like there is a chance it is.
I think even a podium for him would deliver almost as much
excitement,
especially given how tough this season has been recently. So, yeah, that is mine, a Checo podium, which also feels incredibly hot. So I am blown away by this win. But, yeah, I'm rooting for a Checo podium for sure. I think it would be incredible.
I like that. Mine is a Piastri win because I feel like he was kind of quiet this weekend and in his usual Piastri ways. He was pretty consistent. So I want to see that.
I like that.
I feel like all we need one collective backup since none of these are going to happen.
Max wins, says Sarah.
Well, there we have it. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you on the other side of Mexico.